with a number of people on the other side. We have conversations ongoing for a while.
So we're looking at you, not the camera.
You're looking at me. Perfect. Hold on, just have a conversation. Feel free to wander. Yeah. Feel free to curse.
Perfect.
We run an uncut.
People watch it.
where does it go?
It goes on YouTube.
But a lot of people watch it.
And okay. It's...
But you're allowed to curse on YouTube?
Huh?
You're allowed to curse on YouTube?
You are. Do you
feeling
sleep
haggard?
A lot?
No, I sleep a lot. Yeah. I mean, yeah, and actually I sort of try to sleep a lot. I feel like as a professional athlete, you sort of have to. It's like basically the only thing you can really do to increase recovery.
Like, so is your life kind of built, I mean, it seems from the movie that it is, but are all these elements of your life built around being prepared to be able to do things?
Yeah, I mean, my life is certainly all built around trying to be as good of a rock climber as I can. And so... you know, pretty much all the big decisions in my life have been framed around how does it maximize my climbing performance, I guess. Which is sort of a sad way to look at life, but it's just the way it is, I guess.
And so is the movement part of it? I mean, in the movie, in most of the movie at least, you're in a camper
mm-hmm.
driving around or going from place to place, and sometimes you go over to Hawaii, I guess.
No, I've never been to
Hawaii. Or not Hawaii? Where did you go? Don't you go to somewhere?
Oh, there's a picture of me in Hawaii as a kid in the film.
Oh,
you're right.
What it is?
Yeah, there's a picture with like a parrot on my head and all that.
There's three parrots, actually.
Yeah, but that was like a childhood trip. Yeah. That's the classic tourist thing.
So are you wandering these days?
No, I'm wandering just as much. But yeah, the whole point of living in the van is to be able to travel and climb full time, to be able to follow the weather around and, you know, always be sort of at home in a good climbing area.
And was there a moment where... you thought, okay, this is now my life, and I'm going to be doing this. This is what I'm going to do forever.
I mean, not really. You know, there was never a decision like, now I'm going to be a professional climber. There's sort of more that I wanted to go climbing every day. And so, you know, when you look back after 10 years of that, you're like, huh, I guess
right.
I'm a climber. I guess that's what I do. But it's more like day in, day out. I just would rather go climbing every day than do anything else, really.
It seemed almost like a skateboard thing. You know, like you'd see there are documentaries about skateboard kids and groups and whatever that kind of like fall into the lifestyle. It feels more like
a
lifestyle.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, for sure. There's a whole lifestyle around climbing, like van life and all that, for sure.
So you've been part of the lifestyle.
Ish.
For a while.
Ish, yes. I bring a nice outsider perspective to the lifestyle.
Is that what you add to the... is that your part of the puzzle?
I was like, let's just look at our two modes of dress today.
I know, exactly.
And talk about lifestyle.
I'm
like, so relaxed.
I know.
She's like, nice dress.
I know.
Yeah, such a, yeah.
You mean what's my role in the whole thing?
Well, did you marry into this
I
universe?
Married into that... it. I did marry into it.
You married up, as they say.
Oh.
Into a nicer lifestyle.
Yes, I guess. And I think that Jimmy kind of married into my lifestyle too.
He probably made the bigger change.
Yeah, I know. I've been immersed in it now for the past 5 years.
Well, it seems like in some level it's your life reflects the movie, the story of this film, as much as not.
We have a van. Yes. There's a creative outlet for my feelings. And looking at the way Sonny and Alex... you need your own mic.
I'm loud, thank God.
Looking at Sonny and Alex's relationship, clearly I was interested personally in this, you know, and was interested in her articulating her feelings and how she was going to negotiate the situation.
So the initial idea of actually doing the movie, when did that... What was that spark, or was there one? Was it
when we were finishing Meru, we were flirting with the idea of doing a character portrait of Alex. We didn't know about El Cap
because Alex is such a character, or
he is a character, and he is such a character, and what he does is extraordinary. And actually, we didn't think we needed we didn't necessarily need a big objective that he was working on, but then Alex thought the only thing worthy making a film about was free soloing mm-hmm. El Cap, and we were like, holy shit!
Well, and free soloing El Cap is something that I'd wanted to do forever anyway. So when they approached about doing a feature film, I was like, oh, that's the obvious. Like, this is what the film is about.
Huh. So how much structure was there to it? Or was there any?
At first, Jimmy was like, we cannot do this. Like, it's too dangerous.
So the whole idea of doing it was a bad idea.
It was a bad idea because it's just too dangerous. And, you know, there were a lot of ethical conversations around whether or not we could do it. Just the idea, are we enabling something? Are we going to get in the way? Always there's the observer effect.
Do we want to watch?
Do we want to watch?
Is this a film we want to see?
Yeah. Is this a,
let alone create?
Is it too scary? Yeah. Or God forbid the worst happen. You know, that these were like real conversations that transpired. But at the end of the day, we really trusted Alex. And I trusted Jimmy's decision making too up there. Like, I mean, him and the team are like really the best to shoot this type of thing. And also Jimmy, because we're all part of the same lifestyle, him more than I am, he brought an insider knowledge, an intimate understanding of how Alex works that I think was very valuable to our risk assessment situation. But
so it made sense for you in terms of letting them do this?
Yeah.
Is that you already had a relationship? And
yeah, it's like a long discussion. You know, it depends how deep we want to dive into it. But for me, I mean, so there are a lot of like really practical reasons why making a film is actually kind of great for me. One of which, I mean, that I don't often really talk about, but as a professional climber, I'm basically beholden to sponsors and things like that. I'm normally doing events for sponsors. And in some ways, making a film for a couple years sort of took all the other things off my plate because all my sponsors are just sort of like, he's making a film. And so I was able to just blow off all other commitments and just focus on my own climbing goals. And so in some ways I was like, oh, this is perfect. I can align, you know, the film with exactly what I want to do anyway and then exclude all the other stuff in my life. And then, you know, it was kind of a way of like furthering my own ends to some extent. And, you know, as you've seen in the film, the process, the preparation, you know, it's a lot of effort, it takes a lot of time. And so there's a lot of just manpower in terms of like hiking ropes up to the top El Cap and rappelling in with thousands of feet of rope and then pulling the ropes back up. And so it was definitely easier for me to have people helping. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I kind of knew that.
So it gave you a crew also?
Yeah.
On some level?
So the film crew, I mean, basically we're all just sharing the work because like we're both trying to get into the same places. They're trying to get down to film me. I'm trying to get down to climb. But it's like we both need to get 1,000 feet of rope down the wall. So we basically just split the load, carry it up together, and it makes it easier for everybody. Whereas that I've been doing totally by myself in isolation without talking to any of my friends about it. It would just be me carrying twice as much weight up there, and it's just like way harder, you know? And so there were a lot of little practical things like that where it's just easier to be working with the film crew, easier to be working with my friends. And so for me, I was kind of like, oh, I want to do this big thing. It's a big opportunity for somebody to make a film about it. And it kind of makes the process easier for me. I was like, you know, seemed like an obvious.
And is having a film about you kind of like having a book published if you're a... If you're a writer, you're, you know, kind of all this, all the...
Yeah, I mean, as a professional climber, it's a big opportunity to be like, oh, you know, somebody wants to make a film about my climbing. But I knew that it would be a good film, and I wanted to do justice to El Cap. I mean, El Cap has always been the most inspiring thing for me, and I felt like this would be... I mean, honestly, I kind of always secretly dreamed about seeing El Cap on like, the biggest screen available, you know, like an IMAX type, like, I don't know, some mega screen. And, you know, I mean, El Cap is a special wall to me, and I just wanted to see it big like this.
I actually kept on telling people during the festival rounds that they should, you know, make sure to go see it while you can on the biggest screen possible.
Yeah, I mean, it really makes a difference.
It's part of the experience of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a big wall. Like, you need to, really experience it.
So do you and Jimmy kind of make the decision together that you're gung-ho and you know what direction you want to go in and everything?
We have to make it together because the type of films we're interested in making have Free Solo is about this incredible climb, but it's also about, there's a lot more. You know, it's looking at some more universal questions. It's looking at how Alex evolves emotionally, all the deep stuff. And
all the terrible things,
And so we have to both agree that what we're looking for, respectively, is in the story. So yes, Jimmy and I made the decision together.
And do you know how much of the story did you know was critical for you going into it?
Well, I mean, character portraits are interesting, and Alex was clear it would be an interesting character portrait. And we had these talks about, like, if we're going to do this, we really have to do this. Like, and he's candid in a way that really allows the film to explore who he is. Mm-hmm. But no, we didn't know. And we had El Cap, which is clearly, you know, from a filmmaking perspective, is like amazing.
Right.
But
he could have not ever done it.
This is true. he could have not ever done it.
And at least during the context of the film.
Well, that's the thing about making a documentary, is like it's just when. Like, is it 5 years from now? I don't mind waiting.
I mean, you would have minded a little bit, but...
I mean, I would have been annoyed, but I mean, it would have been inconvenient. But Alex was pretty... You were very focused.
I was dedicated.
Yeah, and the idea of doing the work necessary seemed real. But when we started, like, he was online dating. He was releasing a book. He would set up dates in many of the cities where he'd start. And I was like, we've got a comedy. I've always wanted to make a funny doc. my dad is always after him being like, your films are not funny enough. And I was like, oh, this could be funny. And then he meets Sonny. And the whole film, like, takes this turn. And that's, like, the magic of documentary, where the unexpected happens. But Sonny was this incredible opportunity just because of who she is.
Right.
You know, she is emotionally articulate. She has self-confidence. She'll push back. She has enough self-confidence. She loves Alex for who he is and tries to negotiate it. That it was a way of getting deeper because you had someone to react with Alex. And also Alex evolving and falling in love.
So was letting them into that harder than...
Oh, yeah. It's so much harder than... Because shooting and climbing, it feels totally normal and natural. And it's all my friends anyway. So it feels like we're having a normal day on the wall. They just happen to have a camera too. But but then having somebody sitting in your van with you while you're having an intimate conversation with your girlfriend, that takes some getting used to.
And did you ever really get used to it, or is it just...
A bit. I mean, yeah, kind of by the end. One of the cinematographers, Claire, is a pretty good friend of ours now, and he spent a lot of time just kind of quietly posted up in the front seat holding a camera while Sonny and I sort of just lived in the van. And up to a certain point, you're like, oh, Claire's around, you know, he's our good buddy, and we just chat about things in front of him all the time.
So now do you have little cameras set up in your van just because you're used to it? Or?
He actually has a YouTube channel. It's a live feed.
No, that is, no.
Think of the money you could make.
No, man. Yeah. No, I mean, I wouldn't say that I ever, you know, preferred having an extra person in the car, but at a certain point, you just kind of get used to it. And the thing is, I mean, I sort of committed to making a film, and I'm like, if this is... You know, I mean, they talk about trusting me with the climb, but, you know, I was just trusting them to make a good film. I was like, if this is what you need, then that's fine.
Well, for me, that was probably the most dramatic thing in the film. There's a takeaway that I kind of always whisper into people's ears when I talk about the movie. It's the idea of the moment of doing and the question of whether or not you want people watching, essentially. Mm-hmm. When it finally comes down to it, that's the existential question of the film. And you seem to have actually done it. I kept on watching through that whole last segment of the film, trying to figure out whether there was some sort of trick going on.
That's the experience. Yeah, but I mean, it took us a long time to get to that point, you know, where I felt comfortable with them and they felt comfortable with me and they knew exactly where to be, that didn't disturb anything. And I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, I just had to over-prepare to the point where I just felt comfortable with people watching, you know? Mm-hmm. And the thing is, it wasn't that much of a spectacle. You know, when I finally did it, it didn't feel like a spectacle in any way. Like, you see my failed attempt where I'm, like, sort of depressed in the middle. I'm like, oh, you know, it all felt like a little too much for me. And I just wasn't prepared to the point where I could handle that. Mm-hmm. But then by the next season, you know, I had prepared enough that I could, yeah, that it all felt fine.
And had you guys found tricks to making it easier in that regard? Or was it a fairly traditional climb in terms of shooting it once it finally happened?
It's really big. It's really, really big. And so as Alex practiced, our team, who are all elite climbers, like, you know, professional climbers in their own right, who are also cinematographers, trained alongside him. So, and the climb has its own story after a year and a half. Like, we knew that the free blast was tricky and it's where he fell. And that's, it's like the beginning of the climb. It was scary. It was probably the hardest psychologically in a way for Alex.
And the crux were basically the two big things.
We knew the boulder problem. We understood the things that looked sick and that we had to get. So it was choreographed. You know, they trained. And also it was about,
they're
like,
almost
Alex.
Not trained, but had prepared.
They had prepared.
You know, like, they just knew exactly where they had to be and how to do it. And so, you know, I think throughout the 2 years that we were filming, there were a lot of discussions about, like, where do you need to be? How should we do this? Who should rappel in? But by the time I actually did it, we didn't have to have any conversations. And the day before I did it, I mean, I gave the bare minimum warning to Jimmy and Claire, actually. I was just kind of like, oh, maybe I'll climb tomorrow, you know, we'll see, like, maybe. And they, you know, there was no pressure. There were no real questions. They're just like, oh, you know, you do you. But, like, everything just happened.
Right.
You know, like, they were totally ready. The whole crew was, I mean, you know, you were flying from New York to, like, come and shoot from the meadow, and I didn't even know any of it. They kept me really well insulated. I was able to just sort of see through my process, and then we still made a great film.
And did you end up placing cameras That weren't with the cameraman?
Yes, there were a bunch of remote cameras. I think the best example is the Boulder problem, where at the end of the day, we're like, we had to film it, but a remote camera was less pressure.
Yeah, you can see him in the like the big shot of the Boulder problem. You can see the remote cameras on the wall.
But the whole thing is,
I never had any problem with remote cameras. I had a problem with the idea of my friend being like right there next to me, having to watch something that they don't necessarily want to.
Right.
And the thing is, there's this weird mirroring of emotion where, you know that the cameraman's worried, and so you feel bad for him, and he's scared for you, and there's this like back and forth. Where if there's no other human there, it's just you doing your thing. You know, there's nothing like reflecting feelings.
Right.
And so, you know, it was just sort of cleaner and simpler for me to have a remote camera in some places than to be like worried about what my friend is thinking.
Which I assume is what you like about free soloing in part in the first place.
That is part of what I like about it. But the thing is, I mean, I do like seeing my friends out there too. I mean, you've seen the film, like, yeah, buddy, a couple times, and like, you know, give people high fives on top, and you know, they're all my friends. Like, I was happy to see them up there, and I was pretty grateful to share the experience with them. But you just don't want to be stressing them out and making you self-conscious, and you know, you don't want anything weird going on.
Mm. Well, we were stressed out anyway the entire time.
Yeah.
But well. I mean, like, it was a policy that we could never ask Alex if he was going to do it. So that, like, I think that kind of encapsulates our entire attitude towards it. It was like there could be no, to the best that we could control it, we were trying to minimize the pressure and trying to isolate him from what we were feeling as best as we could.
Yeah, you know? And I mean, I was almost doing the same, you know, because through the whole thing, I was sort of putting in all the work, but it was always like, we'll see. You know, we'll see if I ever feel comfortable. We'll see if it ever feels reasonable. We'll just see. Like, time will tell. Because, I mean, honestly, that spring, I mean, when I showed up, the season that I actually did it, just by chance, it had been double normal snowpack in the Sierra. I don't know if you remember 2 years ago. It was like a super heavy winter in California. So the walls had way more snow, and it was way more wet much later in the season than normal. So there was a chance that the wall would have just stayed wet the whole season until it was too late, and then it's just too hot. You know, if it's like wet all the way until July, and then July is way too hot. So, you know, I went into the season and basically did 6 weeks of work in preparation, hoping that the wall would dry before it was too hot, but just sort of like, we'll just see how conditions play out. And then thankfully, everything aligned perfectly at the beginning of June and, you know, worked out.
But, so is it like playing golf courses around the country or something? Like, you know, people go from course to course and like know the conditions?
I mean, it is, but it kind of horrifies me to compare it to golf. Yeah, it's all about following good conditions, getting the good weather, making sure, you know, the course is in good condition.
But you know every mountain that
is
scalable probably better as much as anybody does.
Yeah, I know most of the areas around the world and when it rains, when it's nice weather, like that kind of stuff.
And they all move. They move by, like, it's a good season now in Vegas, so they go there, and then they go Joshua Tree.
The whole point
of the van. That's why they have the van.
Yeah.
They're following the conditions.
Okay, so how much is they and how much is a bunch? Are there a bunch of other people in vans also?
Oh, it's
a
whole culture. So many now. Yeah.
It's a whole thing.
So the whole culture is moving. It's like a nomads.
So my life is a lot more complicated now with, like, you know, film release and whatever. But say, you know, 8 years ago when I was just a single man living in a little van by myself, I would be in Yosemite for the season, and then I'd move north for the summer up to Canada. I'd see all the same people sort of drifting around, and then I'd move back to Yosemite for the season when it's cool, and then I'd move south to the desert, like to Joshua Tree or Red Rock around Nevada. It'd be all the same vans, all the same people. It's like everyone just drifting up and down through the West, you know? You're just like, oh, it's like the whole homeless comic population.
And we're all really happy.
It's a great way to live.
Well, if you can spend your life doing that, it must, you know, doing a thing you love and constantly going to the weather where the weather's good.
Yeah, you're always having good conditions. You're always like, what a lovely day outside. Yeah, it's great.
Having water would be nice. Just, I mean, like, I like taking a shower.
A working bathroom.
Yeah. Whatever.
So have you lived in that way yourself?
No, I mean, we have a van.
Yeah, how many times
have
you stayed in your van?
I've slept in our van
like
maybe
eight times.
Like 8 times with our kids, maybe twice. And, like, you know, Jimmy and I have we made these two films and we have 2 kids in the process.
Right.
Like, so our daughter is 5, our son's almost 3. So it's more.
That's hard to believe.
We're more of a circus.
For a week in the van.
I know.
I've lived in a van for 11 or 12 years or something now. It's like so long.
Well, kids make it really hard.
They do.
They start to go to school.
You need a bigger van.
Some people do it. But yeah, and then we're making these movies, like, hard to edit in the van.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
You know, hard to,
you need
hard to
real
direct
computers.
Other things in the van. But it's fun. I love it when we go camping. You know, I mean, on this shoot, when I would come in, like, it'd be much easier to sleep in the van and see Jimmy for a second.
Right.
But it's a great, I mean, it's a great subculture. I've learned a lot about van life.
So is that another movie? Is that the third in the trilogy? Or
I don't know. I think
that'll finally be your comedy.
I know, exactly.
It'll finally be an uplifting, like, lovely van life
this
movie.
This actually sounds like a great, like, sitcom.
Very relaxing. It could be at the beach, mostly.
Yeah.
There's a lot of surfers are way into van life.
I wouldn't mind that, actually.
So how far was Jimmy into this universe and sponsors and all that stuff when you guys met?
Jimmy's been a professional climber for 20 years.
So he long he, before you,
yeah,
he was...
So he was deep.
Yeah, he was deep.
Yeah,
like, I mean... And a Nat Geo photographer. So he's been... This is his life.
I mean, he was deep way before I was anything, you know. Like, when I started becoming a professional climber, Jimmy was already sort of the golden child of outdoor adventure photography and, you know, outdoor sports.
So you decided... You knowingly married into...
I did.
This idea.
Royalty.
It's
royalty.
Hard to resist.
I mean, he's the Jimmy Chin.
He is the Jimmy Chin.
He is the Jimmy Chin.
He's very charismatic.
He is very charismatic. Yeah. It's true.
So cool.
And when did you realize, I mean, was there a moment where you realized, oh, I can actually live this way forever? Or did you, it seems in some ways like you live so frugally or carefully or whatever that you could get away with it without bigger sponsorships or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my whole life has sort of been a long snowball-y sort of, you know, I mean, what started is just I'm doing van life, you know, climbing full time because I love climbing. And then I started getting paid a bit from sponsors and I was like, oh, wow, I can support myself by climbing. This is awesome. And then that sort of escalated. I mean, I think honestly, it's with this film that I'm sort of like, okay, I will just be a professional climber my entire life. Just because I just think that it seems like the film has a bigger, you know, will have a bigger impact than any of the previous climbing that I've done in my life.
And you're also really committed to your foundation.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that might be what happens post-climbing. But
well, is there a natural, I mean, obviously falling off the rock would be an end to your career.
Yeah.
But aside from that, is there a time where people age out of
not
doing
so
this kind of thing?
And a couple of the most well-regarded climbers in the U.S. are, you know, 50s and 60s now, you know, sort of legends of the last generation. And so there's definitely a path forward where you're just climbing into your 70s and still sort of relevant to the climbing community.
See, that sounds like another movie. The old guys.
They totally exist.
Grumpy
old
guys.
Who are still doing it.
Yeah, they totally exist. And they're also just people who are fans who live in grumpy old guys living in vans.
Yeah, no. But no, basically climbing has more longevity than most sports. It's like relatively low impact on your body and it's like really skill-based. It's not purely physical. So you can sort of continue to improve despite physical decline. You know, I'm 33 now, so I'm already like on the downhill in terms of physical peak. You know, if you were just looking at pure, you know,
muscle
biology,
bones.
Yeah. But I'm still sort of improving as a climber because of, you know, better training, better whatever, and being smart about it. So we'll just see. We'll see where climbing goes.
You do get the feeling watching the film that you are physically, you were kind of born to it in a way that you're, that the way your body is muscular
really.
Seems to be part of what makes this work.
I mean, so I've been climbing since I was 10 or so. So a lot of my body is just a result of climbing almost my entire life.
So the chicken before the egg or whatever.
Well, it's hard to say, but just because as a 7-year-old, I didn't really demonstrate any particular athletic gift, I don't think. You know, it's like I didn't do sports in school. I wasn't like lettering in sports or anything. You know, I wasn't like some varsity athlete. I was just some kid that liked going climbing. I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to know that stuff.
And did your parents get over it at some point?
You mean
that you were climbing on everything?
Well, as a little kid, I mean, it was probably great for me to go to the climbing gym, have a nice outlet. It's really positive. I mean, the climbing gym is safe, fun, you know. And for a lot of my childhood, I would just bicycle there by myself, and so it was probably great for my parents. They're like, oh, he's just gone for 4 hours. He's doing something healthy and productive, and he's having a great time. Like, power to him, you know. And then once I dropped out of school to do it more, they're probably like, oh, WTF? But you know.
See, you can tell how old I am because there were no climbing gyms when I was a child.
Yeah.
That option was not there.
It was just starting when I was a child. I'm sort of a product of the first generation of climbing gyms. And it was sort of just good fortune that a gym opened in Sacramento and that I was kind of close enough that I could go there all the time. But nowadays it's a different world because there are gyms everywhere. So all kids are sort of exposed to a gym at some point. It's like, oh, my friend's birthday party or whatever. But when I was a kid, climbing was still much more countercultural sort of, you know, fringe.
And are there a lot more kids chasing this lifestyle now?
I think it's one of the fastest growing sports in America.
Yeah, climbing is big. It's going to be the Olympics in 2020. I mean, climbing in general is much. It's grown very quickly for sure.
We have a pediatrician who has a list of things that our child should not be doing. We have an 8-year-old. And climbing is not one of them. Climbing, you could actually, if you're using the ropes, I don't think that he'd be left with free soloing, but it seems like it's less actually dangerous in a weird way.
I mean, so that's the interesting thing about climbing is that climbing, you can go through an entire lifetime as a climber and never really be injured. But then if something happens, there's a chance it'll be catastrophic where you die or something.
Right.
You know, basically accidents don't happen often and people aren't injured that often. But when they do, they're potentially very serious.
Yeah.
But
head injuries have become everybody's paranoia, I guess.
Well, that's an interesting comparison. Like if your kid's playing football, like they're going to be hit in the head over and over no matter what, just through practice. And so like no matter what, there are going to be negative consequences to playing football casually. Mm-hmm. But like with climbing, if you're climbing casually, you could do it forever, never have any negative anything. Unless you have one accident where you potentially could die, but they're just super rare. So it's kind of like, you know, I mean, you basically have to balance which is greater risk, you know, being hit on the head every day for a couple hours or, you know, having this like 1 in a million chance that something could happen.
Right.
It's like, I don't know.
So for you guys, in terms of actually just filmmaking and actually trying to get a film process, going through that process, are you expecting it to take 2 years or 3 years or a season, how many seasons? Or, I mean, is that your anticipation and you're doing other things at the same time or are you?
Yeah, I mean, but that's feature docs, right? You take the time you need.
But are you working on like a second doc at the same time you're working?
Jimmy's
out shooting, I guess.
Jimmy is working basically like full time. Like he still does Jimmy stuff.
Right.
shooting commercial work.
Supporting our family.
Yeah. Right.
Because now there's that to do. But yeah, I mean, docs just take a long time. So yes, there's stuff I develop at the same time. I directed a bunch of like nonfiction series stuff, but that's only like 8 days of shooting at a time.
Right.
So I could fit it in. But yeah, no, I think that on average, you have to take about 16 months to edit a doc. And the more time you take, the better it is.
But in terms of shooting this, you obviously, you're not in control of what the end is, really.
So you try to be conservative.
But we did have off seasons and things in between, so that made it more reasonable for all of us to sort of manage our normal lives.
So did you take intentionally 3 months off or 4 months?
Winter, get a break.
And summer in between the first year.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, basically, because the Yosemite season is spring and fall, so the sections in between are just, you know, I mean, they came out in the winter just because we were buying a home. You know, right. So it's like obviously sort of a big life event.
If he was going to actually come back to you.
Yeah. but I mean, through that whole winter, I mean, I was probably training and climbing for 4 months or something. And, you know, we filmed a couple of days, but it just doesn't, you don't need that much to sort of carry it.
So once you had that focus on Yosemite, that was really the central
El Cap was always the
location. That was always the goal.
But he was so totally focused on that. It's just when the season was off, you'd go do other things.
But he was doing other things.
Yes.
So you theoretically could have shot.
I mean,
it just wouldn't be relevant to the story of El Cap. You know, I mean, it's kind of like the Rocky training montage. I mean, when you see the training montage and someone's like, oh, and then he trained for, you know, 45 seconds of the film. But, like, actual physical training takes, like, months.
Right.
You know what I mean? But you can make a montage in 30 seconds and be like, oh, great, he trained for a bit. And you're kind of like, yeah, but the actual process of the training freaking takes a long time.
And also, like, story-wise, Morocco is, like, 8 or 9 minutes in the film. It was 21 days.
Well, or 30 for the rigor.
Yeah.
You know? Everybody.
It's his own movie. But it just didn't make it in. And I think what was nice is that we cut while we were editing while we shoot. So you're constantly refining what you're focusing on.
So how much more of a movie is there? I mean, is there a whole other movie that you have sitting in the can somewhere? Or?
Well, it's not a better movie. I mean, you could make different movies, but it wouldn't be as good, probably.
I think this is the best form of this movie you could ever make.
But obviously you have more footage than you're going to use in a film, but do you have like a whole
Morocco,
a bunch of series of that could be its own
Morocco
thing.
Morocco could be its own thing.
Well, I mean, honestly, you can make a short film about each of the objectives along the way. I mean, that's an adventure.
I'll be editing climbing for the next 2 years. Thank you very much.
Well, you know. Yeah. Well, no, like the excellent adventure, the opening shots of the film are it's a different route that I soloed, sort of as training for El Cap.
Right.
And I think the discerning viewer can tell that it's not El Cap. But I think the undiscerning viewer is just like, holy shit, he's climbing without a rope. And they just assume that it's all El Cap.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, it's just, I mean, that could be its own little thing, too. I mean, that was like a project that I'd worked on and off for several years, and it was a big deal for me to actually do it. But in the film, it just sort of gets absorbed into the El Cap, you know, like it's all, everything is just like, it's all El Cap, which is good. It makes for a better film, but you know, it means that a lot of other projects that I worked on are all just sort of like gone now. you know.
And do you know every nook and cranny in each of the, do you know all these different routes? And one of the things that's fascinating about the film is that everything has a name, I guess. And yeah. that everything really, there's a route, even though you can't see it.
And there's a history to them all. It's all mapped out. And then there are specific ways to climb each one. Yeah, I mean, I know all that stuff for sure.
Do people tell them like folk tales?
Yeah, and kind of.
I mean, share them from one person to the next kind of thing?
Yeah. So the opening shot of the film with like, you know, the beautiful crane shot of me over the valley and I'm soloing and it's like, so like that route was put up by Peter Croft, the sort of legendary climber that makes an appearance through the middle of the film.
And the one you geek out with, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who's like a big hero of mine. But so the route that I'm soloing is the route that he put up with a rope. And the way he did it was very impressive and it wasn't repeated for a very long time. So it's like a story. It's something that I've known since I was a kid. Like, oh, that's a Peter Croft route. That's something I should do. And then the route next to it is slightly easier. Sort of same position, but easier. Right. So it was something, it's the route that he was saying that he'd soloed 50 or 60 times, and we're sitting there, and I'm like, oh my God, you did that 50 or 60 times? Because that was the first route that I had free soloed in Yosemite that sort of like put me on the map, and I was sort of following in Peter's footsteps. And so, yeah, there's like this whole history and lineage and, you know, mythology where I'm like, oh, Peter has done these things on this formation called the Rostrum. I want to sort of repeat those. And then I took it a step further by doing this route that he had put up with a rope, but I did it without a rope. And you're just like, oh, it all feels like part of, you know, the history of Yosemite. But it's not relevant for the film.
Okay. I mean, there's one thing that he makes me think of is that, like, the style part is what it's really hard for other people outside to understand, that how you do something really matters.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
But that's beautifully laid out in the film. I mean, it's one of the things about the film is that the audience, by the time we get to the third act of the movie, we can anticipate, you know, is he going to go this way or that way? Is it going to go this thing going to be there or not? And suddenly we actually know something, or, you know, don't feel let, like just kind of like you're just being led by the chain, which is nice.
Yeah, it was hard.
I mean, I really like that too. I like that it's just laid out as like, this is what's happening. Yeah. No, I really like that.
I'm always amazed that people remember the names of the pitches. Like, yeah, I was like, we did a good job in that particular respect.
So are you sick of mountains yet?
I'm sick of myself. I'm a little bored of myself. But no, I mean, how could you get sick of
mountains? How do you get sick of El Cap?
Because it's a solo business of editing and all of that, that it's isolating, or?
No. We have a great team. Bob Eisenhart edits our films. He edited Meru. I don't think we need to tell another mountain story right now. Like, there are so many stories that are out there, and we have to tell something that's meaningful. So right now, we're not doing another climbing film.
But when you say you're sick of yourself, is that how you...
Oh, no, I'm just saying, I bore myself.
Oh, just talking about yourself.
Yeah, I'm talking about myself because it's, like, so unnatural for all of us. But it's...
You made him do it.
I know, 100%. But that's why I'm on the other side. It was very deliberate.
Strategic,
No, but, I mean, we put so much effort and love and care and craft into this film that it's incredibly gratifying to have it, you know, come out. And... You know, we started with the ethical dilemmas. Like, the weight of this production did not go away until the day he topped out. You know, just the physical weight on everybody's shoulders. And I'm just incredibly proud of everyone who worked on it. You know, they really pushed themselves, the commitment, keeping the thing a secret, you know, spending so many days away from home. Like, it was...
Keeping the thing secret.
Oh, yeah. So, like, no one could know, right?
That he was going to do this eventually? Or that you were shooting it?
Yeah.
In the community, they didn't want people to know.
No.
Because
it'd be too much of like a thing.
Pressure.
Yeah, so, nobody knew.
So nobody knew that your El Cap was an obsession of yours until...
Well, I mean, it's interesting because anybody who's any kind of, you know, high-end climber in Yosemite sort of knew what was going on because I'm up on El Cap all the time with a film crew, and it's like, obviously I'm working on one thing. But surprisingly, it never was really publicly posted. Nobody... And me and the film crew, we sort of did a decent job of keeping it vague with like, oh, we're shooting something for Nat Geo, or like, oh, we're shooting something with the park, or like, oh, you know, just whatever. We just kind of keep it mellow. And nobody really prodded, but I think it's largely because people didn't really want to know. Like, nobody wants to think about it. Nobody wants to know. You know, they're just like, oh, the idea is horrifying. Like, they don't necessarily want to be a part of that. Like, the general climbing community, I mean.
So the fact that it's like, scary is reason for them not to be paying attention? Keeping an eye shut, or?
Well, I mean, for climbers who are there, I mean, yeah, kind of. They're just sort of like, oh, if this is going to happen, like, I don't need to know about it. Like, I don't necessarily need to think about it too much ahead of time. I mean, I think for the average climber, the idea of being up on El Cap without a rope is, like, slightly horrifying.
I mean, you know, I think for our entire crew, like, oh, it was God. Slightly horrifying. And everyone wanted to say, don't do this, right? But we couldn't.
Right. And yet, it was also, what was, it was it.
It was it.
I mean, you couldn't say it because you couldn't say it to him anyway.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't talk him out of it.
But everyone wanted to say it. Actually, probably everyone said it. Like, Tommy says
yeah,
it too.
No, I mean, so. Yeah, no, no. I mean, yeah. At some point, one-on-one, I talked to everybody about it, you know, in the group. Like, because they're all friends of mine. And they weren't like, don't do it, but they're all like, oh, so... How do you feel about that? You know, like, how are you doing? You know, sort of like, are you sure?
Have a chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah, nobody wants to be like, definitely don't do that. You're going to die. You know, but yeah, everyone's like, oh no. You know.
So was there a next thing?
For me?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I mean, right now my next thing is just trying to climb in the gym as much as I can while we tour with the film and just trying to be a good rock climber. You know, we'll see.
Day by day.
And how do you guys... do you communicate? Do you use a lot of social media to keep up with everybody in this circuit, or?
You mean within the climbing community?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean social media a bit, but honestly, most of my good climbing friends, you sort of count on either just seeing them around because you're sort of all drifting and you just run into each other in the same places every year, mm-hmm. or I just call them. You know, I mean, my real friends, you just call them and chat. You know. But yeah.
But you all keep it. Everybody keeps in touch.
Yeah, a bit
somehow.
Well, I mean, honestly, I think one of the coolest things about the climbing community is that you do just drift into each other. And so some of my friends, you know, maybe haven't seen in a couple years, and then you'll run into them some climbing area and basically live with them for a month or two and totally reconnect and then not see each other again for a year or two. It's just like...
It's like a film crew.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah,
a film festival, right? Like, you always run into people you know. It's
right.
Like a similar idea. It's like the climbing gym in Portland is like the Portland Film Festival. You know, so you're
going
to run into the people you know that way. You know, like, you know what to expect. Like, it always amazes me when Jimmy runs into like a random best friend, and I'm like,
yeah, how have I never heard of this guy? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So you just want to shoot a romantic comedy on a stage somewhere and
wouldn't be bad.
Not have it be so complicated? I mean, is that?
There's a film we're working on about Chris Tompkins that it's been like a passion project on the side for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like a mostly archival film. So yes, I don't know, exploring stuff, living in the moment. There's stuff.
Living in the moment.
Yes, so, living in the moment.
So trendy.
Yeah, I mean, supporting...
We're just being present, really.
Yeah. Well, it's a funny thing, because that lifestyle of everybody, you know, of that community that moves around and does all... is in some ways like a doc community.
Yeah.
Because, as you say, everybody's always got three or four things in the fire, and nobody's really...
Mm-hmm.
There's not a, it's not a stable lifestyle in a certain way, and it's not a financially stable lifestyle. And
but no, it totally is. And it's all the sort of self-employed lifestyle where it's all like, oh, I'm just doing my thing, trying to get by, you know. Yeah.
But also doing amazing things, often.
Yeah, potentially. Hopefully. Yeah. Well, and sometimes not, you know, sometimes just festering in your van for a year or two.
Yeah.
It's like, it just depends. Sometimes doing amazing things, sometimes just living.
And did seeing the film on a big screen, which I assume you have,
mm-hmm.
Weird or easy or
a little bit of both. I mean, I kind of love watching the climbing footage. I mean, I think it definitely does justice to the climbing. Watching, you know, my relationship with my girlfriend on the big screen is obviously not ideal for me, but yeah.
Does she like being a celebrity now also, or
she is struggling more than I am, probably just
really?
'Cause I have more practice with it and I mean, she's just a normal woman, you know? She's just, like, living her life and doing her thing, and
she's
suddenly...
amazing.
Yeah, I mean, suddenly her relationship is being dissected in print, you know, and she's just like, oh, that's weird. You know, she's had no practice with that kind of thing, and she's just like... And she's a little younger than me, too. I think that she just, in general, kind of cares what people think a little bit more, you know, like, like, values people's opinions a little more. I think it's easier for me just to be like, F them, you know? I'm like, whatever.
Right.
You know, but I think that for her, it's, yeah, it's all a little more personal.
Well, one of the things that's great about the movie is that it is as much an emotional journey in all kinds of directions and philosophical journey as it is a climbing movie, which is, I think, what makes it above a climbing, you know, it's like
yeah,
not
I mean,
just your average climbing movie.
That's what makes it a good film. You know, I could have been happy just watching the climbing, but I think that an average audience takes so much more out of it because of the rest of the film. But,
well done.
Thank
you guys. Appreciate the time.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Pleasure indeed.
Now can we find out what happened?
Yeah, let's
find out. America's on the brink.
Yeah.